Hi, everyone. This is Cliff, your host for Earth Ancients, startling new discoveries from our planet's distant past. It is Saturday, May 31st, the last day of May, and I'm calling, I'm broadcasting from Oakland, and it is a beautiful day, fantastic day. And today is an interesting day for me because we're going to talk about some fascinating subject related to the work of Zachariah Sitchin. But Sitchin, when he passed away in 2010, left a lot of questions about his work. The Anunnaki, the people who came to Earth and created man, according to him, is a fascinating subject. But thankfully, there's a number of individuals like our guest today who have taken that information and researched it based on their own points of view. I'm expecting a number of callers today. I just want to remind people you can call in today. I'm going to give you the number right now. It's 347-826-9565 if you want to ask our guest today some questions. So Zachariah Sitchin was a scholar. He lived in New York, and I actually met him in 1989 when I was the program director for Whole Life Expo. A few of you might know that the Whole Life was one of the largest alternative conferences, and our regular attendance was about, I'd say, 15,000 to 20,000 people over, and we did a number of programs. So I think we did 8 shows nationally, and had a chance to talk to him on a number of occasions about his books and the Earth Chronicles, which came out in the late 80s and went into the 1990s also. But my challenge with his material was that I wanted to know more about what the influence of the Anunnaki were on mankind. And his focus was more on what they left us. And I have a tape here I'm going to play in a second on his point of view from a broadcast in 1990, which basically focuses on his understanding of the Anunnaki, and then we're going to present our guest today. So, as I said, I spoke to him a number of times. He traveled with us, and I became quite close with him and his wife, Frida. And he wasn't one to give lectures on a great deal of – he didn't want to spend time doing that. And we were very lucky to have him. I'd say we had him – the expo had him probably 10 different times over a 3-year period in various cities. I want to play this real quickly. This is an excerpt. It talks a little bit in his own terms what the Anunnaki and who the Anunnaki were.
The writings and the pictorial evidence left behind by the Sumerians going back 6,000 years speak and depict people who came from another planet called Nibiru. And many of the depictions show them much bigger, at least by a third, perhaps more than the average human being. So they were giants.
If you study the Genesis document, you know, that God made Adam out of clay and then took Eve out of his rib, one of his ribs, etc. If you study this document, you discover that it is really a much shorter version of a much more complicated document that comes out of Babylonia and then out of Sumer and so on. Now, these ancient texts give a really complicated story of powerful non-human godlike beings actually engineering us, making us for specific purposes.
The basic conclusion of my writings has been that those who gave mankind civilization were visitors to Earth from another planet. If I say extraterrestrials, it's a dirty word, but that's what they were. And in order to come and go between them, their planet and our planet, they needed a space facility. The space facility was in a place in Mesopotamia, in today's Iraq. The mission control center was at a place called Nippur, and the actual spaceport was in a place called Sipar, which can be translated as Bird City. Many of them were depicted as birdmen with wings. People are people that look like us, not with little horns or green. People that look like us started to come between their planet and Earth about 450,000 years ago. Why do they look like us? We look like them. Because if you know the Bible, which is based on the Sumerian tales, at some point they engaged in genetic engineering and mixed their genes with the genes of Homo erectus. We can use various scientific terms, but let's say with early hominids, to bring about Homo sapiens, us.
So that's a brief overview of Sitchin himself in his own words about the Anunnaki and their genetic engineering of us, the Homo sapien. So let me bring on our guest today. Today's guest is Chris Hardy. She's a PhD. She holds a doctorate in ethnopsychology. She's a cognitive scientist and former researcher at Princeton's Psychophysical Research Laboratories, and has spent many years investigating non-local consciousness through system theory, chaos theory, and her own semantic field theory. She's the author of many research papers and published books, including The Sacred Network. And Chris is calling to us today from France. Welcome to the program, Chris.
Yes. Hi, Cliff. Hi, everybody.
Hi. So take us to the beginning of your interest with the Anunnakis and the origins of your book, DNA of the Gods. What got you interested in Sitchin's body of work, Chris?
Well, all my life I had a double focus. The first one was in research, and specifically I was absolutely excited on the possibilities of psi phenomena that I was already experiencing at age 18. And it raised so many questions that I was trying to find answers at the time in the oldest books in terms of religious law, of all of them. I mean, from shamanism to Hinduism, Vedism, Buddhism, everything, and including Sufism. And then I had the absolute urge to roam the world and try to find answers in these cultures. So that's what I did as soon as I had my mastery. After about 10 years of roaming the world and learning with so many different people that were not exactly teachers, I was not looking for the guru, you know. I was looking for people who were, sometimes they were a guru, but I was looking for people who had knowledge, and on top of that, who could, that I could see from their energy field that they had, they were operating on a specific energy of consciousness on at very high levels. And that's the people I was mainly receiving knowledge from. And this knowledge, strangely, it was mostly by silent, shared state of consciousness. So that was an incredible change in my life, that I went to so many cultures. And basically, the language could not be a mean of communication, and I had to get things from this shared state of consciousness. And so then afterwards, I came back and I got willing to do a doctoral thesis, of course, on consciousness and specifically on psi phenomena. And that's where I realized the state of the art in America, North America. That was, of course, dimensions higher than what was happening in Europe, especially in France. But at the same time, when I discovered and I dived into cognitive science, I realized that there was absolutely no framework, no way that you could ground an explanation and a comprehension of psi phenomena. Psi phenomena, they are psi, to be short, is basically non-local consciousness. It's the capacity to communicate at a distance, and this distance is both spatial and temporal. I mean, you can see events in the future, you can retrocognition, you see events in the past, you can see events at a distance, the other side of the world or more. And so basically, it's a dimension of consciousness that did not exist as a fact inside any psychological and consciousness science at the time. So basically, I took on myself that I would develop a kind of framework that would be able to explain those phenomena and also the altered state of consciousness that I was experiencing.
Hmm.
So that,
okay.
That was my way.
Okay, very good. So so you would you consider yourself a sensitive, a psychic person?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes. Well, I started meditation when I was 18 years old. And what happened is that as soon as I got into meditation, with basically nothing, just three photos of a yogi in a posture. But as soon as I took the classical posture, I immediately got into high state. And then the states themselves were teaching me. On my
wow.
When I reached, at one point I had a teacher, a Sufi teacher in the East, in the Middle East, and he could not believe that I had no teacher before him, because when I reached there, I was already at the point where I would get into astral travel, so to speak.
Okay.
Control.
So at what stage was Sitchin's body of work of interest to you? Was it after you had completed your doctorate in psychology that you discovered his work, or was it something that was
Oh, I must tell you that I was for a very long time developing this theory of the semantic field theory, and joining with different scientific groups of research international that are international. And suddenly, just a few years ago, I discovered Sitchin. Basically, at the moment he passed away, and I went through his whole series of published books, and I could not believe what I was discovering. So basically, I came back into this field. And just before that, I was focused on working on the megalith and the states of shared consciousness. That was something I had experienced in my life. And I decided I was going to write a book to put together all my experiences and whatever I could synthesize about this energy of consciousness, which is, in my opinion, a real, true energy that is, in fact, I believe the energy that is used by a very advanced civilization, mm-hmm. beyond the radio, gamma rays and all that, whatever energy we're able to know on the beyond the electromagnetic spectrum, the whole spectrum, is another type of energy that is not bound by space or time.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we are going to discover this energy of consciousness, which is pervading the whole cosmos soon, mm-hmm. and quite soon.
Let's talk about the book, DNA of the Gods, and the Anunnaki. Now, what's fascinating about your book is you look at it from a consciousness level, what we maybe inherited genetically from the Anunnaki, and maybe what we can look forward to. In the book, you highlight a specific individual, a genetic scientist. Her name was Ninma. What's important about her in your research? Tell us about her.
Well, Ninma was a fantastic discovery because basically, you know, I have been an atheist before I started getting into my own inner path. But basically, I had been raised into a Catholic religion. And so basically, to discover that Ninma was the head scientist in life science on Nibiru, and then she came to Earth a long time after Enki, who was a head scientist in all engineering and physics and astronomy and all material sciences. And then you have the third person, who is a son of Enki, we call Hermes. Hermes taught in Egypt. And basically, I discovered that Ninma was the one to do the genetic engineering on Earth and to bring about help by Enki, but she was the one to do the genetic manipulation. And she everybody must know that, but she created a hybrid using their own Anunnaki, Nibirian DNA, on the genetic material from a hominid who was a biped and certainly Homo erectus, because the datation that is given in the tablet, according to Sitchin, is the Adamu was created, he was the first successful hybrid being created by Ninma and Enki, and he was born around 300,000 BC, and we have the tablet saying, Enki is saying in the assembly of the gods, when they decide to create a human being to be basically a worker in the gold mines and to serve them, that's what the assembly of the gods, a whole family of royals, the sons and the daughters and etc. of the king Anu on Nibiru. So all those Anunnaki who were on Earth, they were always deciding things in an assembly. And what they decided was to create this worker. And the main problem was how could they do that, because they needed a being who was indigenous from the planet and who had already a soul. This was very strange in the tablet. And Enki started talking, answering this question within the assembly, and he says, but this being you are talking about, it exists. I have seen him. I have found him in the jungle, and he is a bipedal, and he has a soul. It was the hominid. And it must be the Homo erectus who was on Earth unmutating, totally stable species from 1.9 million years ago. And it did not mutate until 400,000 years ago.
Well, let me stop you right there. Chris, what?
Yes.
So you're saying that they found, these Anunnaki found a humanoid to work with genetically, and you think it was, what was the species name that you think it was? I'm
Homo erectus.
Homo erectus. Okay, very
yes,
good.
Yes, yes. And the datation correspond perfectly because, as I was saying, the Homo erectus, which was stable since nearly 2 million years, suddenly started mutating into the Homo sapiens from 400,000 years ago and finished its mutation around 200,000 years ago. And the datation in the tablets for Adamu's birth is 300,000 years ago, right in the middle. So we have a very good match.
And so Nima discovered that humanoid, Earth-based humanoid, had a soul and a level of consciousness. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Well, Enki was the one to talk at the assembly, and he said, let Nima be the one to do the engineering, because she's the knowledgeable one. And then the whole assembly accepts this and votes yes for it. But the main problem we have with the tablets is, we have three creator gods. We have first Nima, and then Enki was first helping her. And then we have Hermes, who was the one to do the... Another, you know, they go by leaps. And so Adamu was the first leap in evolution with the first successful human being, Earthling, Earthborn. But then you have a second leap that I'm not going to talk about, but one man, one woman who was also directly fathered by Enki. And then you have a leap that is done on the living bodies, on the adolescent bodies of Adamu and Tiamat, which are the Adam and Eve of the Garden of Eden. And this third leap in evolution is done within Sumer, because the name Edin is the name of Sumer. So basically, the main problem we have as a humanity is that we had a whole family of gods, the royals, all of the family of King Anu and his wife Antu, and they came to Earth from these children. But Enki had a contender brother, and he was the firstborn of Anu, but at the same time, his brother Enlil was the one born from his legal wife and half sister of Anu. So basically, he got the title of governor and commander of Earth. And Enki got the whole region of Africa, and he's going to focus at the first time. First thing on the gold mine, extracting gold to repair their atmosphere, their ozone layer. And second, with Nima, his half sister, with whom he's also living. He has a wife, and he's also having a relationship with his sister, which was normal at the time. And basically, he's also working on the genetic engineering of the human race that we are.
Okay, let's talk real quickly. What did you discover about this first genetic experiment with the Earth human and the Anunnaki DNA being mixed and exchanged? Was there any writings about the level of intelligence / consciousness that you have been able to find in this first human?
Yes, well, this is the crux of the matter, is that the assembly voted to to create a being to replace the Anunnaki working in the gold mines in the south of Africa. And
right.
So basically they voted for a species with a low intelligence and just able to carry on the load, you know. However, when we look at the tablet, we see constantly in the incredible lapse of time that are covered by the tablet from 450,000 years, as Sitchin himself was saying just earlier in the extract. So basically, we see all the time Enki and Ninma and Hermes willing to give to the new hybrid species, the Earthling, as much knowledge and intelligence on capacities for emotion bonding. They raise them themselves in their own families. They realize that they had to be carried and given birth by Anunnaki goddesses. If not, they were not going to be like them. And they teach them themselves. You see Enki, Ninma, Hermes all the time teaching humanity astronomy, mathematics, of course, language skills, because, of course, in the Bible, when you see that in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve are able to talk. However, they are before the age of reason. So you have this rift, constant rift, between one part of the family that are called the Enkit, who always want to give more and more knowledge, governing skills. The Ninma was giving the kingship to Earthling from the time of Adamu in her town, Shurupak. And on the other side, you see Enlil and his own small family, and his son Ninurta, lord of the armies, and they always want to not to give to the Earthling knowledge and power. They want to keep the power for themselves. So the crisis erupt in Mesopotamia, in Sumer Eden, so to speak, when Enlil wants to see the new couple, Adamu Tiamat, Adam and Eve. Meanwhile, Ninma has done some clones of Adamu and clones of Tiamat to work in the gold mines. But Enlil asks for the couple to be brought to Sumer because Enki and Ninma are living in Africa and he's going to start the civilization in Egypt. But the gold mine on south tips of the south of South Africa, and the engineering is going on in Zimbabwe. So it's the whole of Africa which is concerned. And Enlil wants to see the couple. He asks them that they be brought to Mesopotamia, and he creates a garden for them, the Garden of Eden. And then this garden is situated either within Enki's property in Sumer, which was on the Persian Gulf, his first town, the first town that he created, the first town, the first city of Sumer, Eridu. So basically you have a kind of no man's land where this garden has been ordered by Enlil. At the same time, it's very near the property of Enki, so that Enki and Ninma can keep teaching and raising, you know, the young kids that they take as their own kids. They have raised them as their own kids. You
right.
see, you know,
right.
You see depiction of Ninma having Adamu on her lap, you know, and playing with him, and he's nicely combed and everything. So basically, the crisis in the Eden is that the three creator gods decide that they are going to give another upgrade to the DNA of Adam and Eve together. Of course, they cannot say anything to Enki. All these plants are always among them. because Enlil, the commander of Earth, is very, very fixed in his mind, and he does not want to see anything other than just the couple serving. And if you look at the Bible, you would see the Genesis book, you will see that it's clearly marked. So many information is really marked, but our interpretation, the one that has been handed to us from our childhood, make us totally blind to what is there and what has been added. And for example, you see very clearly that even in the Eden, Adam and Eve were supposed to tend the garden, to work and pluck the fruit for Enlil.
I want to get to Adam and Eve in a second here, but I want you to tell us, you have a very interesting portion in your book where you discuss the struggles between the two Anunnaki brothers, Enki and Enlil, and the humans they created. Why is there such a problem, and why does Enki want to destroy them? What did you find out about that? I find that fascinating.
Well, the thing is that each time that Enlil discovers that the Earthling are more intelligent, more powerful, knowledgeable than he wanted them to be, he decides that he wants to erase them. You come to the conclusion when you read the tablets that an immense amount of information has been erased coming from the tablet, and has been erased and suppressed in the scriptures, and you can see that very clearly, and that's what I was doing in this book, basically analyzing the text with my semantic field theory, and I was able to sort out very precisely which word had been added and which concept had been added. And what you see is that you have basically the commander of Earth is, as I said, a very fixed mind, but he's also extremely racist, because the Earthling have not stopped evolving, and especially with the last leap in evolution, that was Noah, Yuzudra in the tablet. And when he sees, there is at one point, you know, I mean, all these, the greatest royals, the highest royals in the family, they all have a spouse, a concubine, or different concubines. They have a love life totally effervescent, you know, with all kind of affairs. I mean, sexuality is totally free. You have homosexuality, everything, incest between Anu and his granddaughter Inanna, and so it's totally free. And at the same time, they had to have permission from Enlil to have this kind of their own temple, their devotees, their own city. And one who is always left on the side is Marduk, the firstborn of Enki. And when Marduk at one point decides that he wants to marry, he gets madly in love with one Earthling woman who was the daughter of a high priest. And that means that she was a kind of one parent was Anunnaki, and one of the other parent was Earthling. And when he gets madly in love, he wants her to be her spouse. So basically, he has to get the permission of his parents, Enki and his wife, and at the same time from Enlil and everybody. But he's the first one, so to speak, to get a legally approved wedding with an Earthling woman. And then Marduk is also the chief of the astronaut. I mean, they had a space base on Mars, and they had also an orbiting station. And he's the chief of what is called in the tablet Igigi. And Igigi in Sumerian means those who observe and orbit, rotate. And it's absolutely evident that we are talking about an orbiting station. And the, I mean, you see the description of planets very, very precise in the tablet. Thousands of years before we were able ourselves to realize and to observe them. Not so long ago, and so. Basically, we are sure that they had space travels and rocket ships, and they talk about their plane. Each god has his own plane on the roof or in a special room, you know, in his temple. So we have this. And then the Igigi, because Marduk was the chief of the Igigi, the Igigi start revolting because they don't have a place to rest, to come and rest on Earth. They have to stay on in space, and basically they are not allowed to have a wife, and they don't have, quarters or homes on Earth. So they revolt, and they decide that they are going to do like their chief, Marduk, and they are going to... The next time they are coming to Earth for a great feast, because Anu and Antu are visiting Earth, they are going to take wives among the Earthling women. And they do just that. And that's exactly what has become in the book, the story of the Nephilim, starting to mate with the Earthling women. And then, at that point, Enlil, the commander of Earth, is becoming totally, ferociously mad, you know, at this. And he does not want this to happen. And we see clearly that he's totally racist. He wants to keep the Anunnaki, I mean, the Nibirian blood line very, very pure. And that's how... is going to try to erase humanity on for an incredible length of time. The first way to do that was through pandemia. The second way was to create an incredible drought and to have them perish from hunger. And then he could not get to his ends because each time Enki was going to swap Enlil plants and give food to the earthling, try to protect them. He's even asking them to revolt, and this is absolutely funny because we see in the tablets how. When they are dying from hunger, and you have already Noah at that time, Zuzudra in the tablet. So Zuzudra come to his god Enki, his lord Enki, in Eridu, in his temple in Eridu, and he say, Enki, my lord, please, the gods have decided that we were going to, we should die. Please help us. Help us. And then you see Enki saying, okay, here's what I cannot go against the commander of Earth, my brother, orders, but here's what you are going to do. Because he had made a barrier even to block them to access to the sea where they could find fish. And meanwhile, there was absolutely nothing growing anymore, so they had no more vegetable or seeds or whatever, fruit. And it tells them, okay, you are going to pass the word that everybody is going to revolt. and you are going to make an incredible noise and revolt, and then I will help you break the barriers and let you go access the sea. And then he adds, and you are going to stop going to the temples and to pray to your gods. So it was like the first religious strike, so to speak. And so it's so funny.
They wanted to wipe the humans out because they were too intelligent and were becoming too free in their wants and needs and satisfactions, and so this the ruler of the planet decided that he was going to kill them all. Is that what you're? That's what it shows in the writings. Is that correct?
Yes, he decided that he was going to erase the whole of the human race, the Earthling. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's absolutely when you read. I mean, I'm laughing right now, but when you get to the deluge part, because they knew that. Nibiru was coming near to Earth on his very, very elongated ellipse elliptical orbit. It was going to near Earth every 3,600 years. So basically, this time around, they saw that Nibiru was going to get too near to Earth, and it would create a very, very enormous tsunami and a wave that would cover the Earth, was going to cover the Earth, the deluge. So they knew about the deluge, and they acted to save their own skin, and basically either they were given the choice by Enlil, either to get back on Nibiru or to orbit around Earth all the time that the water was going to cover the Earth. And mm-hmm. that's when you see them finally, after the water has receded in the tablet, you see them arriving on the top of the tip of the Mount Ararat that was coming out of the water, at the same moment that Noah, Yuzudra, warned by Enki and given the plans to create a submersible, was himself, and also a pilot, was himself arriving at Mount Ararat, and that's where we get back to the Genesis account.
Mm.
And this is very interesting. But basically, when Elnil, the commander of Earth, this understood by his scientist, he learned that Earth, everything on Earth was going to be covered by the deluge, and all life was going to die. Instead of trying to save also mankind, as they were doing for themselves, he had the worst plan, because his two first plans, by the pandemia, to erase humanity by pandemia, and then through hunger, did not work. So now he took the coming deluge as the way that he was finally going to get to his own end. And he is asking at the assembly, he's asking all the gods to swear that they are not going to give the information to the human beings, and they are going to let them die. And that, again, Enki gets around those orders.
And this is all created as a story that we read in Genesis about Adam and Eve eating the knowledge of the apple, fruit of knowledge, and it's basically the true story is in these tablets. The actual story is in the tablets, which is fascinating.
Absolutely. This is what is incredible for me as a psychologist is when I got to read all at once, I read all those tablets and Sitchin's book, and I went further under that, and I realized that we had been given not only an edited version, as Sitchin was saying with great care, you know. It's not only that it has been edited, our version, it's that I was able to discover that there were two main points. The first one was that we have been fed, you know, the idea that there was only one God who had created everything, who had all, was omnipotent, omniscient, everything. And basically what we discover in the tablet is that we have a whole family of gods, and this family was not harmonious. They had terrible, there is a scission between Enki and his brother and sister Ninma. And at the same time, the aims of the commander of Earth was to keep the Anunnaki as gods, and they made themselves from lords, they made themselves gods. And meanwhile, Enki and Ninma, as I said, was to their aim was to bring about a new species of very intelligent beings that could be on a par with them and could take over the lead of the human civilization when their own species was going to die, because they had enormous problem on their planet Nibiru. And their hope was Earth. But we see all the time in the tablets Enlil willing to wipe out humanity, and a very, very gruesome detail is that he did not wanted, when he said that the Anunnaki could get on in their planes and orbit the Earth, you know, all the time during the deluge, which is about 3-4 months, basically he forbade the Anunnaki to bring their Earthling wife and kids. I mean, this is. Can you imagine Marduk, who was madly in love? Of course, I'm sure he found a solution, and he went to hide his wife and family somewhere with the other Igigi wives and families. But I mean, this is heartbreaking when you read it. You know that he was able to give such an order. I mean, as if you had somebody who had absolutely no idea what means love, you know, and what means a beautiful... well, you know, you see Enki doing the opposite, like Noah. He called Noah the exceedingly wise Noah, Atrahasis. So we see on one side somebody, Enki and Ninma, people, you know, and Hermes, they see very far ahead of time when their own species was going to be extinct, and they want an absolutely beautiful humanity. And we see, unfortunately, the version we have in the scripture not only has erased the fact that we had a family of gods, but it has added also a moralistic framework, like now the leap, the genetic engineering leap that the three creator gods did in the Eden on the adolescent bodies of Adam and Eve became the original fault, sin, you know? And nowhere in the Sumerian civilization do you have any concept of sexuality being a sin. So this is the mark, the signature of an editor, of somebody who took a very old Sumerian text and remade them into a text that was going to be, let's say, the moral framework for a new religion, monotheistic and patriarchal religion.
Let's talk about sacred sexuality in a minute, but I want to get to the meat of your book, DNA of the Gods. From a psychologist point of view and somebody who has studied consciousness, you dive pretty deeply into these ancient gods. and how they shaped mankind's personality. Can you talk a little bit about that briefly, what you have discovered, and maybe what that how that reflects on our personalities today?
Yes. This is a, you see, I'm a psychologist, and the, I believe that we have to do a lot of work. I mean, it's not only that we have to get to reach teaching and understand what happened, what were our real origins, that we were engineered from a human species living on another planet who came to a nomad planet that came to our solar system. But we have also, we have to assess what was the impact of the modification that have been brought to those Sumerian texts. And we have this incredible chance that they were buried under millions of tons of mud brought about by the deluge, in fact, and we are able to discover those huge libraries, like Nineveh Library, 50,000 tablets or so. So we have to assess this, and we have to do that with all people, you know, in their own field of research, and all good sense people also. And we have to assess, you know, there is a new field of research that is called critical biblical studies. And there are mainly psychological criticism of the, and to study the impact of those scriptures, both, you know, of any religion, on humanity, on the people, on the groups, on the people themselves, and the individuals, on the people themselves, I mean. And we see a lot of different psychologists who are working in this field, and they have really a lot of things to say about what they call toxic text, or the origin of culpability through the original sin. Can you just realize what it means that we have been fed with this original sin since infancy, and it has never existed? I mean, how do you want adolescent boy and girl not even able to reason, being held responsible for an act they did before they ate the fruit of knowing good from bad, from evil? How can you hold them responsible for this? Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah. So basically, you need people to get back on this, on the... reflect on that a lot.
Mm-hmm. So talk about a very good section of your book about sacred sexuality and how it's been repressed, not only through the Bible and its reworking to be more of a controlling tool, but in your opinion, you feel, if I'm not correct, let me know, but you state that sexuality, the natural urges of mankind, have been repressed, not only through the church, but through ancient doctrines. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yes, I believe that it started with Enlil, in fact. Because if you remember, this commander of Earth, while the royal family had a very luxuriant love life, the Anunnaki working in the mines were not allowed to marry, have a family, and neither the ones in the space stations. So already, and they were working like slaves, That's why they ask for some workers, you know, and they decided to create this human species. But how can you understand somebody like Enlil, who himself was a totally repressed sexually, contrary to all the others, because he had done some fateful excess in his youth, because the only crime at the time of Sumer, in the Sumerian civilization, was rape. And so basically, after that, he became totally rigid in his morality. And that's how now he's going to repress all the others, while the royal family is totally free. And this is already absolutely atrocious in my opinion. But then, I mean, the Sumerian gods, they change, the chief of the god change once in a while, in a long span of time. And then you have the great-granddaughter of Anu, the granddaughter of Enlil, the commander of Earth, who became the first among the gods. And Inanna, the goddess Inanna, also called Ishtar or Lilith, this Inanna, I gave you the photo, you have put it on your website, Inanna as an astronaut. And Inanna becomes also the goddess of love, and she had also a very rich and beautiful love life before she lost her sweet one, Dumuzi. And she wrote, because they were writing themselves, she wrote some of the most beautiful poems about love, and also other Anunnaki wrote love poems. And humans then started writing love poems to Inanna. And she became the goddess of love, and she started the secret sexuality in her own temples. And this is the root of the matriarchal era, first of all, and also of all the ancient mysteries, you know, in Egypt and Greece, because the Sumerian law, through Enki, who started the Egyptian civilization, and then Hermes, and Thoth Hermes, and everything, all of them, basically the knowledge of Sumer went into the Egyptian civilization. From Egypt, it went into Greece, because most of the great thinkers and philosophers and scientists in Greece went to get a teaching on their knowledge in Egypt, and all this from Sumer. And then from Egypt, of course, it got into the Roman civilization, and then to us. So it has been a chain, and so you have those mysteries in Greece, the mysteries of Eleusis that were derived from the Isis mysteries and Osiris also mysteries in Egypt. And so all those are the rituals, and then you get to the priory of Zion, of which we heard in the Da Vinci Code, you know, with the kind of rituals, and also passing through the Celtic civilization with Beltane Festival.
That's fascinating. Can you describe for us as best you can where you think we are going with this DNA in our makeup? Do you see a future where we begin to have attributes of the gods? Sitchin doesn't describe the consciousness of the Anunnaki with any detail. And one of the things I think that your book does present is the possible ramifications of this genetic engineering of humans. Can you speak to that a little bit and what you predict?
Yes, exactly. You hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead. I guess we've lost Chris here for a second.
Okay, you hear me? That's where I'm.
There
asking.
You are.
I'm sorry.
Very good. Okay.
Yes, yes. I have a button, but it has no light, so I was sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. So, yes, this is a very important point, the psychological makeup of the Anunnaki that was transmitted in our genes, in our own human civilization. Well, I have a very good news for everybody, is that I am dead certain that the Anunnaki, all of them, did not possess psi capacities and hardly some precognitive dreams. That's all. It's they had no telepathy, no developed intuition, no warnings about things to come. They had not even the most basic mental intellectual skills that we have developed, which are for example anticipation, self-reflection. They are not able to assess their own actions, reflect on them. It doesn't exist. With Anunnaki, they get into incredible rage, are absolutely unable of any self-control. So basically, we see, and it's of course a point of interest, because if you remember, I started by researching psi phenomena, and this is of course a very, very, very important subject for me. And I was discovering with great joy that the first person we see having a very strong clairvoyant information is Eve, but the second Eve, because they have been made into one, into the scripture, but the mother, Titi in the tablet, is the mother of Cain and Abel in the tablet, and of course one is going to murder the other one, but we see Titi, so the second Eve in the tablet, suddenly feeling that her son, Abel, has been murdered. And she rushes to the place and discovers the murder. Hello?
Yes.
Yes. So basically, I believe that, and also if you look at what I said about the parenting, the impossibility of Enlil to connect with his wife, he's abandoning her for ages on a row, and then he has to be attracted there. It's absolutely we have made an incredible leap in terms of maybe not in terms of some scientific domains, but globally we have made an incredible leap in terms of consciousness and intellectual capacities and psi capacities, for sure. Yeah, and I believe that psi capacities, and this is why they are so much repressed and suppressed as information, is that our future hope lies in the development of at the same time, our spiritual capacities and our psi capacities jointly, you know?
That's fascinating. So if you have a question for our guest, Chris Hardy, Dr. Hardy, you can call us at 347-826-9565. That's 347-826-9565. And press number 1 on your phone pad, and I will call on you. We're going to take a few questions here. So here's a question from Sandy in San Jose, California. Dr. Hardy, do you think the Anunnaki are still around? Do they exist, and are they coming back?
After the deluge, there was an enormous mistake again, the deed of Enlil, the commander of Earth. And because even if there was a chief among the gods that was different, he was always behind there, supervising. And basically, they decided again that they wanted to get rid of Marduk. And Marduk, who was thrown out of his own town, his own Babylon, took refuge, quickly said, because in fact he created a new city and temple in Palestine. And he had a lot of followers, because Marduk was in the Tower of Babel incident, which is also in the tablets. We have Marduk trying to create the first community of Earthling and Anunnaki, himself and his close family, as equals, and living together and sharing everything from knowledge to absolutely rich wealth and everything. And so basically that's how Enlil gets upset and of course destroys the Tower of Babel. And so a few times, all the time, two or three times, Marduk has to leave Babylon, even if he has done incredible, magnificent irrigation work, giving water to the wall of Mesopotamia and everything. And so basically they want Enlil and the Enlilites want again to get rid of Marduk, and this time they are going to get to nuke the places where he is living in Palestine. And this is the absolutely horrendous nuking of five towns in Palestine, where they always believe that the population of Earthling belong to the god who is staying there, you know. This is incredible. And what happened is that the contaminated winds went back directly on Sumer from Sodom and Gomorrah and on five other towns, including the Sinai spaceport. And so basically they erased the wall of Sumer, and they had to escape on their planes, on their birds, as they call them, their whirling birds, whatever birds. And they escaped to some other places that we don't know. But we know that they were not quick enough. First of all, they did not have the information about contaminated winds. They did not check with the winds. They were unable to control themselves, Nergal and Ninurta and Enlil, and they decide on the spot to nuke the place. And so we see that they, a few generations after Anu, they don't even know some of the aspects of nuclear energy, you know, the functioning of, and notably the contaminated winds. So most of them got very sick, got contaminated, and some of them died. And I believe that after this nuking, which happened in 2024 BCE, 2024 BCE, most of them were either dead or dying or absolutely unable to, on the way to their death, apart from a few people that strangely got ahead of them. And of course, our scientist Anunnaki, namely Marduk, who was able to know in advance and get out with his son, and certainly Enki. Now Ninma, we see her. I don't know, age, very old on the tablets. They were getting older quicker, you know, on Earth. So I believe that I'm not sure if there is a very few of them, like a couple or two or three of them, on planet Earth, or at least I know that their consciousness are very alive, but I'm not sure, I can't be sure if they are really in our dimension or in between dimension, but other ones, I don't think they are there anymore.
Okay, so do you have in all your research and working with the tablets, were you able to kind of tap into the consciousness, and do you think that there's still a potential consciousness influence from the Anunnaki, or are we on our own now? Because I asked that.
No, we have another problem now. It's not the Anunnaki anymore. I don't. Whoever is still there, and at least alive in spirit, as I said, they are very allied, all as they have always been with humanity. But they are not. We have never seen in Enki, Ninma, or Hermes any kind of grabbing of power. You know. What we have as a problem is not in in the, we cannot find the information in the Sumerian law, and in answering you, I'm getting into my own I would say clairvoyant and specific psi gift that I have. Psy without name, with no name, and basically I feel that there is a federation of exo civilization, very advanced civilization, and in fact in this federation in our galaxy we are going to get into integrated soon enough, I believe. And we had from this federation, we had some kind of custodian species that was totally alien because absolutely not human. And I believe the Greys were their kind of bio robots. And this is the problem we had. We had some custodian planets, because if you imagine that a federation of advanced world exists, then you have to understand that there are politics going on at the level of the federation, and that a species of alien that somewhere, because everybody is seeding life, I mean, but then you have some kind of pecking order, you know, with the highest, the first creation having seeded two or three different intelligent species in some world there, out there. And then you have some kind of pecking order of those creations or generations. And whenever you have a species, that's what I found out finally, is that when Enlil on the Nibirian decided to create a new hybrid species using partly their own DNA, they were upgraded as an intelligent species in this federation, because now they are the lords of another species. But then at one point it's disrupted, because you have this federation, they have to send custodians species, and at one point a species is does not want to stay on a very far away backward planet somewhere waiting for the intelligence of the species to come out and science to start and everything. And so they leave the planet to another custodian species. And that's what happened, is that I believe, and this is in my science fiction, it's not exactly published right now, but I will, and it was called Diverging Views, so I'm going to at least make a Kindle book out of that, and it's okay. All everything I was able to receive and understand. So that's okay. Our problem. So our problem is no more the Anunnaki. And these custodian species, they were trying to smother our development, I believe, and to suppress the information. And that's why all the powers that be, whether religious, political, imperial, or whatever, were always, always trying to suppress the information from the human species, from the humankind. But now the information is coming out everywhere. They cannot stop us anymore. And that's it. So we have disclosure is not something that is going to be given to us. I mean, disclosure is something that at one point we are doing ourselves. We are implementing ourselves. And it has, I mean, the work done by a lot of people on disclosure is absolutely fabulous. And Sumer, I mean, the Sumerian tablets are a tiny part, very, very interesting because we have very precise information. So it's part of the tapestry of disclosure, yes.
This is you've undertaken a fascinating aspect of the Anunnaki that I think our listeners are really going to enjoy. The book, DNA of the Gods, The Anunnaki, Creation of Eve, and the Alien Battle for Humanity. We have just a couple of minutes left, Chris. Is there anything you want to leave us with? Any final points on what you've discovered?
Yes. I get back to this idea that there is too much information coming out from any kind of domain, be it from the ancient aliens, from astronomy, from people working on the Mars, on the Moon, on the runes. There are certainly some of them Anunnaki, based on Mars, on everything. And we, geology, you know, with the age of the Sphinx, we have too many people, too many information coming from all kinds of different domains, and we have to move ahead boldly on that, and also, of course, about the cover-up and the incredible, as I said, the magnificent work all the people on disclosure did, and we have to keep going very, very boldly and take the reins of the planet into our own hands, because we are going to meet soon enough this federation, whatever its political organization right now. And of course it's going to be politics as usual, very complex, very all kind of divergent parties on species, on the world, the universe is teeming with life, and we are going to be already discovering our neighbors, you know, in our galaxy. That's a fantastic, fantastic time to live and to work in right now.
Fantastic. Chris, thank you for being with us today. Can you tell us where you're going to be? I think you mentioned yesterday you're going to be in the States. You're in France right now. Give us your schedule. Now the book is out, DNA of the Gods. You can find it on Amazon. I saw it the other day. And it's a great read. It's a fantastic read. It has a number of illustrations in here that are just wonderful. Tell us where you're going to be in the next few weeks, Chris, if you're going to be speaking
yes,
at any conferences.
I'm going to be in the States. I'm going to have an interview by Kerry at Camelot Project. And also, I'm going to be participating and talking, speaking at the Ancient Aliens Conference in Kempton, Illinois. And
What day and month is that?
On the 14th of June. And please look at David Childress Wex Club, World Explorer Club. Either on Facebook or on Facebook is perfect. And then you will see the on my blog also, and you will see the Ancient Aliens. You will have David Childress, of course, O'Brien, Christopher O'Brien, talking about Mars, and of course also the great expert on Mars who has discovered that there was a definite nuclear explosion.
Are you talking
science.
About Richard Hoagland? Hoagland, is he going to be there?
No, no, John Brandenburg, who is an expert in plasma and on meteorites.
Okay.
So he's going to talk. So it's going to be fascinating. And so, John, my blog, where you can find even events page, you will find everything. So my blog is my name. With between each on my name and then my book name, and a small dash in between all. So it's Chris H Hardy H A R D Y slash non pardon dash DNA of the God.
Okay, I'm going to put it up. Voilà. I'll put your website link up on the Facebook page so everyone can access it. And we look forward to good things coming out of your research, and it sounds like you have a lot more to present. So, again, the book, DNA of the Gods by Chris H. Hardy, and it's a really nice step forward from Sitchin's work and takes us kind of into the future. So thank you again, Chris. I really appreciate you being on the show. By the way, before we end, how is the weather today in France, and what part of France do you live in?
It was kind of, I'm in a province. It was kind of nicely warm today. On the now the night is coming.
Ah, very good. Well, I will be in touch. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Cliff. And bye bye, everybody.
Right. That was wonderful. That was Chris Hardy, DNA of the Gods. And I really suggest you go out and get that book. Sitchin's books are fun to read, but they're so heavy with content, and it takes a while. I typically had to reread his books a couple of different times. As a reminder, next week my guest is Artie Skillkeller Clark, and she has written a number of books, but her most recent book is on her research in with the Maya and their connection with what they call sky people. And she takes the native perspective, which I'm always interested in, and has written some interesting perspectives and data on the influence of sky people on the Maya. So have a great day, and I hope we'll see for another episode.